I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. In the event of war in the Pacific in the 21st century, we welcome Jim Holmes. James Holmes is the first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College. He blogs at The Naval Diplomat, writing in 1945, Anticipation of War in the Pacific. Jim, the Marine Corps has a doctrine called Stand in Force. What is that, and how does it compare to the way the Army is preparing for a conflict in the Pacific? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Hey, Gordon. Sure. The Marines, for the last 4 years or so, since former Commandant General Berger came into his term, he's just recently retired, but he started pushing a family of concepts, of which the idea of a stand-in force is one. The idea is very, very simple. It's basically to announce to China that we are not going to be chased out of the Western Pacific as we were at the opening stages of World War II in the Pacific, but that we're going to be resilient and stubborn and keep ground forces as well as naval and air forces in the region, even though they're within reach of China's sensors and the array of anti-ship missiles, tactical and strategic aircraft, and so forth. So that involves essentially scattering small units of Marines along the first island chain, especially the Ryukyu chain between Japan and Taiwan, in order to deny China access to those islands should it want to conquer them, and also to deny the PLA Navy, Air Force, and Merchant Marine access to the straits that lead between the islands into the Western Pacific. So you safeguard Japanese or allied territory, and you also deny China's Air Force and Navy access to maneuver space that it deeply needs.
These Marines would be armed with anti-ship, anti-air, and anti-submarine weapons in some fashion, Jim?
You know, there is talk about anti-submarine warfare. I haven't heard much about that for a while. I think it would be chiefly anti-ship missiles and also anti-air. I should also point out that in the Japanese southwestern islands, the Ryukyus, the Japan self-defense forces have already established garrisons on those islands. So the Marines would be working with allies along the island chain as well. And I would say, I think the Army sees itself as having a role to play as well.
And multiple islands, not just one at a time, scattered throughout the first island chain, including the Okinawa chain. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Over the past dozen years or so, I've taken to calling it a Great Wall in reverse. Basically, a Great Wall. If you can seal up all those straits, you have essentially boxed China into the China Seas. And created a lot of dilemmas there. I think it's a major deterrent to Chinese aggression. Provided we field the right military forces, work with our allies, use maritime geography correctly. I think it's a key advantage for ourselves, our friends, and our partners.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
Jim, I agree that this is an important defense. But in every war game that has been run, the United States loses significant assets in the first half hour. Is it wise to put Marines and Army on these islands in the beginning, or should we just sort of hold them back and then have them move in after the initial barrage?
Yeah, well, the question is, move in from where? I mean, if you were to remain in reserve, where are you going to keep these forces that near scenes of action that they would actually be in a safe sanctuary and then could venture out? Now, the idea is that it's really hard to root out ground forces that are mobile. We learned that in Western Iraq in 1991, in which we were chasing down Scud missiles and never caught a single one of them. The idea is that the Marines would be mobile along the island chain, and they would evade. They would do their best to minimize their electromagnetic signature and do other things to prevent their being detected. So they could surge to points where they're needed, working in concert with Japanese forces as well.
The Army, the U.S. Army, it played a very important role in the Pacific War against the Imperial Japanese Navy and Army. Does it have a comparable role to the Marines in the anticipated Pacific War?
Yeah, it certainly does. In fact, we simply have to have that sort of heavy ground power, all the associated manpower and logistics and weapons inventories and so forth. I think the army's concept feels to me as though it's not as well developed as the Marine Corps, which came from a clear vision by one person, General Berger. But the army points out that it can help hold key terrain in the Indo-Pacific, so islands. all the places that might become flashpoints in the center in the future. It does feel like the Army has a more static vision. They don't seem to be talking about doing the sort of mobile operations that the Marine Corps are doing. So I think these visions of stand-in forces, even though the Army doesn't use the language, I think they're compatible if the two services are actually working together to coordinate their efforts.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Jim, how does the Army get to the fight? Or are they going to be stationed on these islands from the get-go?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I guess I would call attention to the. I mean, alliance diplomacy is going to be huge as far as having access, preferably before the fight comes. Before the fight comes, simply because China has its anti-access weaponry, aircraft and missiles and so forth that can target forces that can target large transports moving troops around the islands. But we've actually made headway with that, particularly in the Philippine Islands, where President Duterte, who was very skeptical of the U.S.-Philippine alliance, is now gone. His successor is open to that. This would also be a key part of that island change strategy, that Great Wall in reverse strategy to again box China in.
At this time, Jim, you're talking about the Army, talking to the Marines, talking to the Navy. Is that conversation underway or proposed?
You know, I think there's a lot of, and it's probably on both sides, but there's a lot of frustration on the Army side as it tries to make its case essentially as a sea service, as a maritime service in the Pacific. The very senior Army officers, they worry why their message with the Navy does not resonate. And when they ask me about this, I tell them to study what's important to the Navy. Talk to the Navy in language that will resonate with the Navy. How do these ground deployments actually aid not only the larger effort to win the war, but also how does it help the fleet? That's what Navy people care about. If fleet operations is the center of the Navy's worldview, explain how Army operations fit in with the fleet and also with embarked Marines and Marines operating on the islands.
Gordon, you have a question.
The Army has huge M1 A1 Abrams tanks, which are very effective. But would they be effective in an island strategy? And does the Army have the right equipment to implement the strategy that they are thinking about?
Sure. I think tanks would very much be a secondary implement in the island chain defense strategy. In fact, the Marine Corps has discarded its tanks from its inventory, so it does not see that form of armor as part of an island chain defense strategy. The really important thing is to have anti-ship missiles with the range to reach out within the China Seas, but also to create overlapping fields of fire in the straits so that they become impassable to surface traffic. And obviously you would do an air anti-air component of that as well. So I think this is very much a missile environment. I could see some use for it for the Army as far as repelling amphibious invasions. But I think missiles are going to be the primary weapons used in such a strategy.
Various voices from the Pentagon and from other parts of the apparatus have used dates as to when to anticipate this conflict, 2025, 2026, 2027. Does the Army have a date, Jim? We have 30 seconds.
I don't think the Army has fixed a date. I think there's still an open discussion about whether 2027 is actually go time for China, or in my view, it's actually when President Xi Jinping actually wants to have the option to order go time. So I don't see Xi has actually put himself on a fixed deadline, and I don't think the U.S. Army has a fixed view either.
Jim Holmes holds the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy, Naval War College. Gordon Chang, I'm John Bush.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.